This is being taped at a regular meeting of the Lansing Unit of the Women's Overseas Service League, April 19, 1986. We are seizing this opportunity to record Eileen Lay's experiences overseas. Eileen has been a member of the Lansing Unit since her retirement from the Detroit school system. She was born in Windsor, Ontario, but her early years were spent in Ann Arbor, Michigan. After graduating from college, she taught in Howell, Ann Arbor, and Detroit, Michigan. She taught music, early elementary, and auditorium and music. Eileen was always active in community affairs. She ran Christmas sings and pageants. Her artistic ability allowed her to design the costumes used in these pageants. She also liked to paint, especially scenes. Then Eileen decided to go overseas, and she taught 3 years in Japan from 1950 to 1953. Not only did Eileen teach over there, but she worked with the Japanese people. Eileen will tell of these experiences in this recording being made for our unit and our oral history project. Now, after living in Lansing in order to be near her sister, Shirley Quimby, Eileen will be moving to Apache Junction, Arizona. Her address there will be Mount Vista, 3400 South Ironwood, Apache Junction, Arizona, 85220.
No, I never known you to not be able to. You don't have to stand.
That's the truth. Will you excuse me if I don't stand up? I rock, so. But really, it has been... I'm so glad to be going out into the sunny climes. I don't recommend that at the age of 70 anybody breaks up their house after you've been collecting for 50 years. Because there's nothing like opening old boxes and finding wonderful things. That's true. But it all has to be taken out, washed, polished, and repacked. And this can entail a great deal. Right now, I have boxes up over my head. I mean, piled up in the so-called dining room, in which I have rarely dined. But the new house that in Apache Junction is going to be bigger than the one I have now, 4 feet wider and 10 feet longer, I think it is, something
like
that.
Junk,
pardon?
You like more junk.
Well, yes, but I don't intend to collect anything larger than a piece of turquoise from now on. I don't think so, but Shirley has been bringing things out of nooks and crannies in her house, and my hope chest over there, and in the closet. She has wonderful closets under the eaves, of which I availed myself right and left. And it's fantastic. As soon as she brings it out, I recognize it. I can tell her where it came from, whether I bought it, whether it was given to me, and so on and so forth. But you mean you're taping this? Oh, my Godfrey. Well, anyway, okay, dear.
I had to get your voice on here, Eileen.
Oh, so you really
didn't want to lose your...
No, well, anyway, but the thing is that I remember them, but I didn't know I had them, you know. 13 lacquer trays she brought down out of my hope chest. It's not really good lacquer. My best lacquer are the 20 trays that I've got in my china closet there. But all the same, she has brought so many things out, and there are so many things left. I can't tell you, boxes and boxes of, anybody want a new dress? I've got materials for it. It has been wonderful to be associated with you folks, because I always told Shirley, this is one group that is always looking beyond itself. It isn't sunk in on itself. You all have personalities that at one time stood you in good stead overseas, and the ability within yourselves to be self-reliant. You're the kind of people that did things, and you're still doing them. And it was nice, even though in these last years I haven't been able to do diddly spit, as it were, because of blindness and feet that are tree trunks instead of light, happy, dancing feet. Still, the mind speaks to the mind and the spirit, and it's been wonderful to be with you in spirit, if not always in presence, in body. Something else I wanted to say, naturally. Yes. Remember I said I was going to write out some songs and song sheets for you folks. Well, I want you to know that the folders, red, green, blue, and yellow, were bought 6 months ago. And I am taking out all the song books that I have, the real old ones, that we'll get those songs from, with me, and I will have to do the sheets out there, or do them, and I'll send them back to Shirley. She'll keep these covers, and insert the things in them when she gets the sheet and runs it off. Now, whether they'll be handwritten, I may have to handwrite it, you know, or if I can find somebody out there that will type, that would be another thing, but probably handwritten. But then Shirley might type them up to save space and run them off, and you'll have them. Eventually you'll have them, because the big thing was the folders. Once I got the folders, I was committed, you know. Yeah, I was committed anyhow the minute I told her. But it has been lots of fun to sing along with him. I can remember singing on the Ainsworth going over to Japan the first time. I was sitting on a hatch on the forward deck 2 nights out of Yokohama. And we had a load of signal corps men on. And they had found out by that time that I was a rabble-rouser with my voice, you know.
Eileen, I'm curious, on the Ainsworth, was that when we were caught in a typhoon, or wasn't that the trip?
No, we were not in a typhoon.
Okay,
that would
all
have
right,
been fun.
Then we weren't the one.
No.
It was?
No, yeah.
Then that isn't the trip I met you
and
on.
And that was
okay.
No, I met you in Japan, I think.
Okay, well.
And coming home, we were on the same. Mm-hmm. That was the Buckner, I think. Well, I crossed 4 times, because I came home the first year in the summer, and spent 30 days at home. That was something. Well, anyhow, I was sitting on the hatch, and they brought a little camp stew out for me. We had special service men all around. There must have been several hundred of them, and hanging from the rigging. And we had some song sheets. God bless the song sheets. And I would start them out and give them a get going. And the special service girls were there too, some of them. And I knew, you know, that in 2 days these men were going to be thrown into the Korean War, because the Signal Corps, that's what they were there for.
And where were you going from to?
From Seattle to Yokohama. And this was in 1950, in the fall of 1950.
Do you want
the
me
war
out?
Had just broken out.
Yeah.
Pardon? Pardon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Be sure to have those drawers.
My kids, man. I'm going to take a picture.
And I went down below decks, where the men were. Some of them didn't get up that night. And we had a song fest down there, too. And it was so hot below decks that I was perspiring like mad, and I got up and stood by the rail and felt morose about the whole thing, because we could only do so much, you know, and then they were going into combat. But I caught pneumonia and didn't know I had it until 3 days later when they gave me 600,000 shots, units of penicillin. This was at Camp Gifu. That was so strange. We arrived in Camp Gifu at night, in the middle of 3 o'clock in the morning, actually, as we were on the railroad train down from Yokohama, from Tokyo. And I swear to God, you know those little crabs that run around in places? The BOQ was empty at one end, and every room seemed to have a crab in it, scuttling away into the corner. But luckily we had those camp cots, you know, with the wooden, so we dosed down, as it were. But a few days later, I turned up with pneumonia. I didn't know I had it. But we had such an interesting time there. Now, we did have typhoons in Gifu. The principal and I were caught up at the PX. It was about 3 blocks up the road one day. PX was such a fascinating place. And we knew that the typhoon was coming at 3 o'clock. Well, they did have this thing timed down to the last minute. So at 10 minutes to 3, we decided to leave the PX and get back to the BOQ. But as we went down the road, bending over from the waist, almost as though we were formally bowing all the way because the wind was so strong, there were Japanese soldiers stationed all the way along, and they warned us we'd better go around behind the library because the corrugated iron sheets from the library were being blown off like leaves in the wind and were kiting across the road, and they said we could be decapitated if we went by it. So we decided to go around the windward side and just barely made it. And then we stood in the BOQ, I stood in the door, and watched the camp go by. You really did see a lot of things going on that wind, because we were not facing into the wind, we were crosswise of it. And here goes a corrugated sheet, 4 feet by 4 feet, just kiting through the air like a newspaper, you know? And tiles and other things that the wind picked up. Typhoons are lots of fun as long as you're not out in them. Many people have been hit in the head by tiles and thereby hangs a tail. But, some of the casualties are from being hit by flying objects. But of course, I guess Dorothy in Kansas had very much the same thing. They say that we have such things that will drive straws into oak wood and pluck a chicken. This bothers me.
You have to eat it then.
Yeah. Well, as long as it doesn't turn it inside out like the leopard seal does to the penguin.
Mm-hmm. Were you teaching out there, Eileen?
Yes. You could teach anything in Japan. I started out with the second grade, I think, and graduated to first, and then I had second and fourth. I had 45 kids that time, second and fourth. And the North Central Association came around and said, that's not kosher. So they divided me up. But it was everything. I even taught arithmetic, me, in summer school, the second summer, into the sixth grade. As long as I kept a chapter ahead of them, I was all right.
You had an answer book too, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. Without the answer book, I'd have been sunk. I really would have been because, you know, you know how I keep my checkbook? Mm-hmm. I never put the cents down. I'd either put it above the 50 cents. If it's 51 cents, $20.51, I count it $21. If it's below 50 cents, I count it $20. So eventually I wind up with more in my bank account than I've actually got. But I don't care as long as the bank's honest.
The bank's total, I'm sure.
Well, but it's true. I hate to subtract. And that would be just... I know some people have spent 2 days looking for 3 cents. In fact, I've got them in the family. You know, Bob did that once. Bless his heart. But I couldn't spare the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so this works fine. When I left Detroit to come up here, I had $80 I didn't know about, you know.
Well,
this is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
May you do as well when you go to Arizona.
Well, I hope so. I have no idea. Seems to me I think there are $200 more in my bank account than I've got accounted for in my checkbook. Well, I can't believe it.
You'll have to go to her system.
Yeah. Well, it does save money without you even knowing it. Of course, it could go the other way, too, I suppose. But we generally... I must say that when I was teaching, I was really scraping the bottom of the barrel sometimes. I mean, there'd be $5 in my checkbook. That's all. But so if it went the other way, that would have been hard. Well, now here we are back in Japan again. Are we back in Japan? Yeah. I came home at the end of the first year for a vacation. Spent 30 days at home and went to 32 parties. Now this was tough. I slept all the way back. We had roomettes, or what do they call it? Yeah, roomettes.
And the train?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I never left that except to get something to eat. I was sleeping all the way back across. And then because I had been through Seattle and had friends there, there were two more parties in Seattle, but I just barely got on the ship with all my goodies. I'll never forget going over there in the first... Well, anyhow, I should write a book about this sometime, because I think I had adventures.
All you have to do is talk to me. We'll put it on here.
Ooh.
Right,
well, anyway, because... I had a lot of lacquer boxes when I came to pack things, a lot of them. And it turns out that I went out and judged English-speaking contests amongst the Japanese high school people. And every time I did that, I got a little lacquer box as a gift, which was nice. But I had 14 lacquer boxes that I hadn't achieved by myself, as it were. Well, I achieved them, but not by myself. Oh, yeah. Then I had a couple of my very best lacquer box is a beautiful thing that was given to me by my Wednesday night English class. These were men who were all older than I was. One of them was from the Maeda steamship lines, or the Ikeda. Oh, OSU. I don't remember. I've got it written down. As long as I have it written down, I've got it. And there were five others in this English-speaking contest. The English class. We met every Wednesday night for 2 hours, and they would choose a different place each time. So I kind of got to know places. I'd go by taxi, and they would all meet me en masse. And it was from them that I received, when I left, a scroll from the Maeda family vaults, from Maeda province, you know. It's about 300 years old, and it was by a man, you know, Kakemono, who had always painted cherry blossoms before, and this was the only time that he ever didn't paint cherry blossoms. And it was a fish, a great big carp, going zoot like this up through the water. And it was in shades of brown and tan, with a little faint rose and blue in it down in the water. And he was a beautiful carp. He's still a beautiful carp, and he belongs in the museum. But they knew I was going to pick that instead of the cherry blossom. They had a cherry blossom one there, too. But cherry blossoms are dime a dozen, and this carp was something else. And also, it represented to me those men that I had spent a year and a half with every Wednesday night.
Eileen, that wasn't the carp they fly out in front of their house when a new baby boy is born.
No. This was a live carp in the water.
Hey, was this the one the cormorants caught?
This could have caught a cormorant.
Is that why the men reminded you of that?
No. Well, you know, the carp is supposed to be the fish that will swim upstream and will fight against all odds. Like the bamboo will bend, but it will not break. And the carp signifies Japanese manhood. And that was my Wednesday night class. you couldn't call them a class because they were all older men. One of them had been through the war, and he couldn't believe the tales that I would tell him about what the Japanese had done to our boys, you know? Because after you've been with people for a year and a half, you get so you talk pretty freely. And I was the only female there, and they talked to me. I told them the worst mistake that they had ever made was to bomb Pearl Harbor without giving us any warning or without any know-how, just sinking our thing. I said, there nothing could have united the American people the way that did. And because we were sixes and sevens, really, with Roosevelt wanting to get in and so on and so forth. But that united us. We absolutely, just like that. So, well, we had some very interesting talks. We talked about everything. It was a conversation class, because they wanted to be able to speak English. Most of them had studied English, but way back when. But they were pretty good by the time he got through. Well, it's one that I couldn't believe that he had been fighting for his life and really hiding from the Americans down in not the Philippines, but some islands down there. And he'd been on the run for 6 months trying before he finally got out of there. And he was the gentlest, kindest, sweetest person. He was a dear. And he had written a book about his experiences and had it mimeographed. I still have that copy someplace, but I've never had it translated. And I've always thought I should have it translated and publish it. Maybe he's done that already. But very interesting people. Each one a completely different personality. They introduced me to bananas and milk whipped up with a little bit of ginger ale in it. That was a very refreshing drink. That's the kind of thing that we did. We'd never had any sake or anything like that. We just were a business meeting. Well, anyway, now let's see, what else? Oh, I had a chorus of 120 Japanese national policemen. 6 weeks after I arrived there in Gifu, they moved about 6,000 new Japanese troops in there. These were young people that hadn't been in the war, except for their officers and their non-coms. Those were recruited from the old ranks. But these were the Yobitai, the Japanese National Policemen. And the reason for that was because our men had just been taken out en masse and sent to Korea. Well, it was strange to see. They all looked alike at first, you know, naturally. But they began to resolve themselves. And about 2 weeks after they got there, I was up in the church. I was always choir director in whatever place I was because of my musical background. And I was up there playing the organ for my own enjoyment. And they could read, they could sing it. They knew the tunes, but they were pretty good. That was the group. I wound up with 120 of the Japanese National Policemen in a chorus. And we met at the church every Thursday, the night after the choir rehearsal, or the night before, I can't remember which now. And every Sunday night we had a get-together, and in the end when they shipped them out, I would, and Nagai-san, and I would meet with them and say goodbye to the guys that were going out the next day, and we'd sing God Be With You Till You Meet Again, Till We Meet Again, and that, I can never sing that song because it made me cry every time. And here are these Japanese men sitting there with the tears streaming down their face, you know, because they were leaving. And they didn't want to leave us because we were their sister and their mother somehow. I remember, we had a great time. They kept writing me letters back from these Japanese camps that they'd gone to and say, Dear Mistress Lai, you know, because they had copybook English, as it were. And one gentleman, when young fellow, I don't think he was more than 19, met me in the rain, or walked me back to the BOQ in the rain one night, and I said goodbye to him, talked to him, and he seemed so kind of lonesome, and I tried to buck him up a little bit, and 3 weeks later I heard he had committed suicide in the camp where he'd gone, because our men had been sent over to Korea, you see, that's why they moved these 6,000 in, and they became Yobitai. Later on, a couple of years later, they turned this Yobitai group into the Hwantai. And one of my friends was Major Gower, who was the American head of the Yobitai group. When he was moved out to a place out in the boondocks, someplace in the mountains, Kawasaki, someplace up there, he wrote and asked me if I would come up and help him entertain some Japanese visiting dignitaries. Well, that was a tale all by itself, because I had to stay in a hotel down in the town, and the little maid sons were so careful of me. My God, for you thought I was made of beaten gold, ready to bend and break in any minute, but they watched over me from the time I got up to the time I went to bed, all night, I guess, and the next day. And Willie Gower, who was a very punctilious person, he was very, very careful not to offend anyone at any time, although I knew that he was suffering from ulcers. The Army didn't know that. But when he'd order something for at the bar, or he had, it was always Coke. It was not anything that had any, because he couldn't drink. And so he was just my cup of tea, and he loved to hear me play the piano. Well, anyway, Willie, after he deposited me at the hotel and went out and walked the streets in the town for about an hour and a half so everybody would know that everything was on the up and up, because there evidently was some Americans that visited some of the complement of officers or people up there under Willie that were not. So he wanted them to know that I was. And I was. Well, anyway. One of the things that we had enjoyed so much was the cormorant fishing at Gifu. We were stationed there for a year, and the Nagagawa Officers Club was situated on the other side of the town, more or less, from the camp where we lived. And we would go up there and we could spend the weekend, or we could just go for a night and go cormorant fishing. We'd get into these sightseeing boats that were flat sampans, and they would oar us, and I mean oar us, you know, push us or pull us up the river. It was a shallow river, well, along the edges anyway. And well, then we could, way up the river, we could see these lights floating, and there were charcoal braziers or wooden braziers with flames on the bow of each boat. There was a kind of a metal basket with the fires in them to attract the fish. We would call it jack lighting over here. But there they could do it, and their fish would come up close to the boat. They had about 5 or 6 cormorants, and they're the ones with the long necks that are real fishermen. And these birds would line up along the side of the boat, and then the fishermen would throw them off into the water and they would catch the fish. But there was a little ring around the base of their neck to which the fisherman attached a cord so that he could haul them in and push them out. And also the ring kept the fish from going down into the bird's gullet. If he caught one small enough to go down, that was his reward. But all the others, when the fisherman saw that the bird had a lot of fish in his neck and were down here, he would pull him up and then squeeze, 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 and the fish would flop out into a box. He'd throw the cormorant in and set it fishing again. And the boatmen would hit on the edge of the boat with their oars, with their poles. And this also would attract the fish, the sound. And it was all very exciting. We had a few fireworks, and we would drift down for about a mile with these fishermen. and they would come and show us all the fish that they caught in the box. And you'd be surprised, those birds did a good job. The funny thing is, the fishermen all wore grass skirts, very thick grass skirts. The reason for that was because the cormorants had been known to take a bite out of them. So for 1,000 years, this had been going on, and the fishermen had learned that they'd better have these, not grass skirts, they were straw. Well, same thing, I guess. But dried straw skirts. And the cormorants were kept in lattice-work boxes, about 2 feet high, 2 feet wide. And if you didn't line the cormorants up, that's why they took a peck at the fishermen. If you didn't line them up on the boat in the order, in the pecking order of the birds, then they would start pecking the fishermen. It had to be a number one bird up near the bow, and then so on and so forth down toward the end. God knows what the last bird thought, but he didn't peck anybody.
You think that's how he got the term pecking order?
Yeah, they'd have it with chickens, too, in a farmyard. I think that's where we found out about it. I don't know when the Japanese found out about it, but the birds definitely have to be in the right order. And if you don't get them, and they fight among themselves, or they bite the fishermen, and you have to turn around and switch them. But anyway, it's a very exciting time.
That was the most delightful experience I think I had in Japan.
The cormorant fishing
yeah. Down at Gifu, right.
Yeah. Well, we would go about once every 2 weeks during the... Oh, it was fun. It was just lots of fun.
Well, they use sparklers too, don't they?
Yeah.
Eileen, did you ever get any reaction from the Japanese soldiers, ex-soldiers, who, in regard to the war and this sort of thing?
Well, no. I think not the way you think.
Not negatively.
No. Occasionally, as I was riding on the trains, because I used the same transportation they did most of the time, I didn't bustle about in jeeps so much, but and I got around quite a bit. But in the trains, they would come in, and they would be war wounded or amputees, and they would, you see, Japan didn't have any way of taking care of their war wounded, or the people like we do here. And they were on their own, and they would pass the hat like this. And my golly, when they got to me, I had to put my yen in there. I could not do it, because I would want, if we had that same situation, we would do it here. And occasionally, I saw it. The amputees would be in the railroad stations, and I always tried to help, and when I could, because I knew that they had no care whatsoever. In fact, they were anathematized for having come back at all, because that was the Japanese idea, that you gave your life for the emperor, and if they came back, or if they arrived back, that then they were just persona non grata.
Jane, I will say that there, they have the expression aso desca, which means so it was.
That's the way it is.
I think
so
the only experience I had in that, my Japanese lab assistant said to me, when you first came to Japan, weren't you afraid of the American military? And I said, oh no, Otsubo.
No.
I said, if they harmed me, the people back home would know, because they wouldn't be hearing from me, and they could write to my congressman and find out what happened. And there would be protection from the American government. He did not believe me.
Oh, I see. I mean, they were pretty bitter then toward the military.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The people who came back, their mothers were glad to see them.
Yeah,
on the whole.
Did, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the only time that I ever had any trouble was when we were in Hawaii, and we went out to see the remains of the ship, the result of the bombing. And I think one of the saddest things was a Japanese family with tears on their face.
Yes. Yes. You think the Oriental is inscrutable. Well, he's about as inscrutable as we are, or more so. I've seen more Japanese with tears in their eyes. I suppose it was because I was in unusual situations, but or because ordinarily, as you face the Japanese, they will try to make you feel good, and they won't show that they feel bad about anything as long as they can make you feel good. But if you get to know them, or if you're warm and you're flowing back and forth as it is, and they feel that you don't have a barrier there, they're likely to be just as emotional as anybody else. I found that out the first few 6 weeks I was there, when, as I say, these departing soldiers would weep.
Eileen, let's take another angle on that. In their kabuki place, they laugh when someone dies.
Well, no, I think you misunderstand that. They're laughing not at the fact that somebody has died, but they're trying not to put a bad face upon it.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have seen colored people in Detroit, mm-hmm. Do the same thing. They laugh like mad when somebody got hurt. That's not because they're laughing at the people.
Yeah, I understand that.
It's an emotional reaction.
It's to
hide happened.
Their feelings.
Yes, that's right.
I hate to break this up.
Yeah. Oh, I've just been talking
well,
like mad.
You did it purposely, Annie.
Yeah. Well, you did.
Yeah. I have got a tape of it. But I want Eileen to identify herself and give us her new address.
Well, I'll tell you what I did here. I did a lot of speech making. And I spoke for the Asahi Shimbun, the Asahi newspaper English Readers Club, the Mainichi English Readers Club, of 14 English-speaking contests, a couple of universities, the English Reading Club, and I also had a chorus of 120 Japanese policemen, about 100 boys and girls, 90 boys and girls from the Osaka Culture Center. These were about a year and a half apiece, or 2 years, depending on how long I was there. And then when they moved me out, darned if these kids didn't follow me to the new chapel. And some of them rode, electric railway and so on and so forth, and made several changes 3 and 4 hours on Sunday mornings before they even got to church. It really, the loyalty there is tremendous. This is one thing. Let's see, what else did I don't know. There were other things, too. 3 years.
What were the years?
1950. Then I came home for the summer in 51. Went back in 51 and 52 and 53. Came back in 53.
Mm-hmm. We met on the Shanks, I think.
Oh, is that Shanks?
Give me your name, your new
Frances Eileen Lay. Frances with an E. Mm-hmm.
You're with the Lansing unit now,
yes.
WOSL.
And I will be in Apache Junction at Mountain Vista Mobile Home Park, which I just put MHP.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to 6400 South Ironwood Drive. What's that lot number?
379.
I keep trying to say 397.
And the date here.
What's the phone number? 9823636. Well, there's a 1602 prefix.
Okay. 1602
and this
prefix?
Is, 1602 will get you Arizona. And it's 602 all over Arizona, so you'll see.
And today is April 18th.
April.
19?
Oh, God.
1986.
Yes.
Thank you, Eileen.
I've lived a long time, you know that.